I had the privilege of doing a wedding last night. And every wedding I've done, I've only done a few, and the little bit of marital counseling I've done, you know what never came up in any of the discussions was when they were going to shipwreck their marriage, when they were going to self-destruct, when they were going to commit adultery, when they were going to walk away from one another. You know, when I've had an opportunity recently to spend time with a buddy who has battled addiction, never did he think when he took the first puff of meth that he was going to ruin his life, lose his kids and his marriage. It didn't ever occur to him. These are great examples, but the daily life of a Christian is one where oftentimes we think, I never thought I would be in this situation. How did I get here? I've yet to meet anyone who professes the Christ to say, I just want you to know, I'm just letting everyone know. I'm just taking the first steps to more and more situations that are sinful, that will lead me away from the Lord, and that I'm going to probably drift away from the church, and I'm going to do things that will lead me away from Christ, but I just want to let everybody know, these are just the first steps. You guys know where I'm going with this. Nobody talks like that, do they? Because nobody thinks that sin can lead to the places it can. And especially as a believer, we think and we overestimate our own spiritual strength. Where we never think that one day I'll be so consumed by sin that I will deny Christ. And I'll no longer hunger for the things of Christ. I'll walk away from the things that were once important to me, or once that I made a profession of or took vows to. I can just easily discard it. Yet, as I said already, sadly, that can become the pattern of Christians we know. Or maybe today, that's you. Or someone you know may be on that path right now as we speak. This section we come to today is sobering. I'm excited to preach it because it convicted me, and I hope it'll be convicting to you to take a sobering look at our lives, because Peter's a believer who loved the Lord but sinned greatly. And there's something we can learn from that. We arrived at this scene last week because Jesus was arrested and his interrogation, both illegal, was taking place. And Jesus was arrested and bound and taken before the former high priest Annas. He was questioned, and when he spoke up about the way they were questioning him illegally, the officers struck Jesus with their hand. It's fascinating how John chose to write this. He wrote it with two scenes playing out simultaneously, and I handled them each individually. So last week we considered what Jesus was going through, but now John wants us to shine the light on what Peter was doing while Jesus was going through his arrest and interrogation, and the decisions that he would make on that night to help us learn so that we may not follow in those sinful footsteps. Begin with me in verses 15 and 16 here, where we see the determination of a Christ follower. Jesus has been arrested and he's been bound and he's being led to Annas when John switches the scene on us here. And we hear that Simon Peter followed Jesus and so did another disciple. Now, there's been much debate and there's much writing. You can read the commentaries, your footnotes about who this other disciple is. Most people think it's John, but there's no way to really know. We'll just know that there's another disciple who was there with Peter. But according to what we do know, Matthew 26, 56 tells us that the disciples fled after Jesus was arrested. After the chaos and the fleeing, apparently Peter and this disciple who is not named were tracking with those who arrested Jesus. And this other disciple who is not named was known to the high priest, and he entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. Verse 16 tells us, but Peter stood outside the door. Peter was not given admittance in when he first arrived. So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke on Peter's behalf and spoke to the servant girl keeping watch at the door and then allowed Peter to come in. So his name got Peter in when he was at once told not to come in. This unnamed disciple had enough clout and enough relationship to speak with this girl and to be able to vouch for Peter that he was allowed to come in. Now, before we go any further and we dig into the steps that Peter took into greater and greater sin on this night and that would lead to his his denial, his infamous denial, we need to do a quick recap, though, of who Peter was, lest we give an imbalanced and an unfair portrait of Peter the disciple. Because the facts is, and the facts remain, that he was the disciple who was always the courageous leader. He was always the one who was first in line, ready for any action. He jumped out on that water. He was always the one who had a bold faith, did he not? Matthew 26:33 tells us, though, they all fall away, Peter said. Because of you, I will never fall away. Now, he's that guy, too. Peter was one of two disciples who followed Jesus. After they'd scattered and he got his bearings and he courageously, he followed Jesus. Peter had enough courage to be near and want to know what was going on. Peter, just moments before, displayed his ill-timed courage, but courage nonetheless in defending Jesus by cutting off the ear of Malchus. Now, it might be unwise, and as Jesus told him, he didn't come for that time. He was still courageous and loved Christ. His impulsiveness and his misguided courage came from that fact. And we must never forget the fact that he loved Jesus. And so this is the same Peter whom we will look at tonight, but this is the one who had a track record of jumping up first and being willing to do the things that Christ had called. He's also the one who confessed to Jesus before his other disciples that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. He was bold in his faith. So we find Peter at the courtyard of the high priest on this night because of his courageous love for Jesus. But the scene does not stop there. Let's move on to the second heading, the denials of a Christ follower. These will be verses 17 through 18 and then that 25 through 27. Let's go back to the door at the courtyard of the high priest. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, "You also are not one of this man's disciples, are you?" And Peter gives a very sharp and quick response. He said, "I am not. I am not." This is Peter's first denial. We use the word denial, but Peter's lying. I mean, these are lies. And it's a bold-faced lie. But if you stop and pause at this, why did Peter deny being a disciple just immediately and reflexively and defensively, as the Greek shows us here? Why was he so adamant in denying Jesus right offhand? Because the unnamed disciple who he was with was clearly recognized and was let in, and there was no issue. So how come so quickly did the courageous one deny? Why did a lie become the first thing that came to his tongue when things got hot? Not sure if it was just the pressure of the moment that caught him off guard. We've probably all been there, have we not? Caught off guard and said and did something that you wish you could have back. We don't know if it was fear that had crept into the normally courageous Peter, but now I think we'll make a case on why he did what he did. But at this moment, we don't know. Either way, Jesus had foretold to Peter in front of the disciples what was coming to fruition. Do you remember back in John 13? I'll read it if you don't. 36 through 38. Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered him, "Where I'm going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterward." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the rooster will crow. I say to you, the rooster will not crow till you have denied me three times." So Christ has already told him this in the evening, and now it's coming to fruition with the first one. This is the man who said, "I will lay down my life for you," and a servant girl at the door asked him a question, and he's already denying Christ. That's the picture of Christian life, is it not? We can be both of those at once. But let me continue. Verse 18, it says, "Now the servants and the officers made a charcoal fire because it was cold." It's the evening, it was cold. "They were standing and warming themselves, and Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself." Looking to just blend in the cold, dark night, Peter joins the servants and officers and many who had likely been at the arrest of Jesus. And being recognized to put Peter on edge, and you can feel his anxiousness and his mind swirling on what to do. And so Peter moved further and further into sin, as just like Judas, as John writes, he's crafty in his writing, he stood with them. Remember when Judas came, it said Judas was with them. And Peter now has not only denied, he's moved over with them. Verses 19 through 24 finds Jesus inside being questioned by Annas, while Simon Peter, verse 25, tells us was standing and warming himself. Then Peter gets questioned by the servants and officers, and they said to him, "You also are not one of the disciples, are you?" And once again, he denied and said, "I am not." While Peter is out warming his hands and his body, his heart is getting colder and colder. He's becoming more comfortable in denying Christ, and he does it now for the second time. Peter was hoping to blend into anonymity, to be left alone, and yet things were about to get even more unsettling for Peter. Verse 26, you got to chuckle a little bit. One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter cut off, was there. Of all people to run into on that night was the man who's a family member whose ear you cut off just moments ago. And Jesus healed. He says to Peter, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" And for the third time, Peter again denied it. And once he did that, a rooster crowed. Imagine that, of all people to run into, and the fear and the panic that was setting in on Peter. And after he denies him for the third time, and I'm going to be flipping over to Luke here in just a moment as I set this scene, and we'll dive in deeper, so you may want to keep your finger there. But Luke 22, 61 and 62, it tells us, "And the Lord turned and looked at Peter as the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying of the Lord, how he had said to him, 'Before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times.' And he went out and wept bitterly." You don't think Peter was thinking, "How could I do this? How did I get here? I just told him I'd lay down my life for him, and he was right again, and I've denied him three times." And the piercing look of the Savior turns over and sees him wherever he was at. Can you imagine? You know how it is when your parents or someone can just tell you a lot just through a look. And here's the Christ whom he's given his life to, who's signified in the body and blood that he had instituted on the Lord's Supper, that his death would be sufficient and his sacrifice would be accomplished. And he's now looking him in the eye. And Peter realizes, "I have sinned greatly," and he wept bitterly. Peter had hit a low point, had he not? And all this over the course of about an hour, he denies the Lord three times. He lied so easily, and now he was weeping so bitterly. But the question I want us to each ask ourselves today is, how did Peter get here? But more importantly, I want you to ask, how do we get there? How can such a courageous, bold, and professing believer in Jesus and sin in such a public and sobering manner? After all, he was educated at the greatest seminary ever known to man. He was in the school of Christ, handpicked. He had been with him. He had walked with him. He had ministered in his name. He had done great things in the name of Christ. And yet now, the courageous one buckled under the pressure of the night and denied Christ easily and is weeping tears bitterly at what he has done. But I also want us to ask, what can we learn from Peter so that we can safeguard our lives, so that we don't find ourselves in the darkness of sin, making decisions, saying and doing things that we never thought we would say and do as a Christian? We've often heard the statement, have we not, our greatest strengths are often our greatest weaknesses. And for Peter, this was the case. And I would dare say it's the same for you and I. Let's look here at these problems as we dig in here. How did Peter get here? The first problem we see is his self-confidence. One thing Peter never seemingly lacked was self-confidence. Confidence and courage went hand in hand when you think about Peter. But at times he could sorely overestimate himself and become spiritually cocky. Listen to Mark 14. I'm using all the Gospels to make the point here today to help us understand this moment. Mark 14, 26 through 31. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives, and Jesus said to them, "You will all fall away, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." Peter said to him, "Even though they all fall away, I will not." You're telling Jesus that he's wrong. They might do it, I won't. Jesus said, "Truly, truly, I tell you, on the very night before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." But he said emphatically, "If I must die with you, I will not deny you." And they all said the same thing. So he's in good company. All of them had overestimated themselves. But Peter, on this night, would deny Christ. How did he get here? Well, first off, this self-confidence that he knew better than Jesus was the first step that he took to ending up where he did. And see, this is a subtle step that we all take. Because aren't we the same way? We so overestimate our spiritual strength and ability that quite frankly, we can be cocky Christians. That we are so self-confident, forgetting just how needy we truly are. But that's the first step that gets you to the place of darkness and denial and destruction by just being self-confident. When Christ teaches that you can do nothing apart from Him, that we must abide in Him, nothing means nothing. But too often we forget that we are branches and we're not the vine. Anything good that we produce comes from abiding and being connected to the vine. It's when things are going well, quite frankly, then God is blessing us that we tend to slip into self-confidence mode and think we're pulling it off. Again, this is not just for the worst of sinners, but I will talk about as I've been in places and rehabs with guys who are battling drugs. And one of the things they told us beforehand, if they come in here after this 30-day detox and tell you that they don't need more, they're in trouble. And I looked a buddy in and he came in. He goes, "I don't need to go on anything after this. I'm good. I'm not like everybody else." That's exactly what he told me. And he's still battling it 2 years later from that conversation. Now, that is a dramatic picture. But every day in our lives, we are faced with whether we will walk in the self-confidence of our flesh or we will rest in the work of Christ and gain our confidence that when we are weak, then He is strong. And I must cling to Him because apart from Him, I can do nothing. And so it's not just the drug addicts or the porn addictors or the adulterers that we like to make as the worst of the worst. It is every single day, because if not, then you will find yourself on a path that you never thought you would be on. When Peter's telling Christ he's wrong, Peter never saw himself on this night. But it began when he thought that he was self-confident and strong enough that he didn't need the church. It didn't need to be a regular part. I didn't need the word. I don't need the things that everybody else needs because I've got other things that are more important. I got family, jobs, work, and all these other things that are much more important. And the next thing you know, your self-confidence will find itself on its knees because God will bring us to the end. But that's just the first step. It was the first step for Jonah, was it not? When they said, "Go to Nineveh," and he got a boat going the other direction. It's the same step for all of us. But you see, self-confidence then teams with self-sufficiency. This is the second problem. I want you to hear me in Luke 22, verse 39 to 46. It's a little extended, but I want you to hear it. I want you to hear these words. Luke 22, 39 to 46. This is when Jesus is on the Mount of Olives, and he came out and went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed him. We talked about that. That's why Judas knew where to find Jesus. And when he came to the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not enter into temptation." This is Jesus Christ telling his disciples, "Pray that you may not enter into temptation." And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, saying, "Father, if you're willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." And there appeared to him an angel from heaven strengthening Jesus. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose from prayer, he came to the disciples and he found them on their face praying, beseeching the Lord in all their glory, right? Nah. He found them sleeping for sorrow. For sorrow, he said to them, "Why are you sleeping? Rise and pray that you may not enter into temptation." Jesus modeled it there. We heard the high priestly prayer of John 17. Jesus gives us here in this section, and any quick read of the Gospels, you will see that Jesus praying and the disciples were not. You remember what Luke said about Peter denying Jesus? Let me refresh you. Luke 22, 31 to 33. "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you," this is Jesus speaking, "that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." Peter said to him, "Lord, I'm ready to go with you, both to prison and to death." Jesus taught and modeled the importance of prayer, yet Peter and the other disciples were sleeping. When they needed to be praying that they wouldn't give in to temptation, instead, they were too drowsy. They didn't understand what spiritual warfare was going to look like. Peter, like each of us, is all too often ending up in these sinful situations because we're filled with self-confidence and self-sufficiency. And that's a dangerous combination. Here's how it goes. Spiritual pride, I got it. I'm handling things in my own strength. And then it leads to prayerlessness. And then you are in the danger zone. You are the Christian that is walking around with the check engine light on, and you think, "Well, I can go another 500 miles before I get in a tune-up." Well, you might run it for a while longer, but you're going to run it into danger. And this is what happens. The check engine light spiritually was coming on to Peter, and he was too self-confident and self-sufficient that he didn't need to do that. Because he'd already told Jesus he's not going to deny him. He already told him what he was going to do. "I'm good." Jesus repeatedly taught that the key to standing against temptation was prayer. No temptation to seize you, what is common to man, but God is faithful that when you are tempted, he will provide a way out so that you could stand up under it. But we must pray. But a self-sufficient and a self-confident Christian will find itself taking steps to places they never thought they would go. I'm shameful to say this. I'd prayed recently for some opportunities to share Christ, and God brought two or three up. And I told you, and man, it's amazing what God's doing. Like, I'm shocked. Like, I'm shocked that God would give opportunities to do what he said he wants us to do. Isn't that sad? But we all can get there. We can do Christian things and do it in our own strength because we live in a blessed nation and so many comforts that we have that we don't have to trust God for very much. But it's a dangerous place to be. Self-sufficiency and self-strength and all of these selves lead to trouble, but it doesn't end there, sadly. The next step down, again, think of Jonah. He gets on the boat, and then he goes down into the boat to rest. It's the same picture we have here with Peter. He took a step to do something in his own strength, and then he goes down a little further. Luke 22, 54, hear these words. "Then they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's home, and Peter was following at a distance." Self-preservation comes next. This is the key. Luke tells us that Peter followed at a distance. He's courageous to follow, but he's at a distance. It's another picture of where our strength can be our weakness. Peter was courageous enough to be out there and to see, but he was still more concerned with his self-preservation, so he kept him at a distance. I'm curious, but I don't want to be labeled with him. He wanted to keep a safe distance when he began to get questioned, because now there was a cost involved. There's ramifications. And at this low moment of his sinfulness, he didn't want to be associated with Jesus. I'm going to be honest with you. This is the easiest one for us to detect in others. When sin sets in, we like our distance from Jesus. We find ourselves more and more comfortable with our sins. These two will go together, but he was at a distance. Have you found yourself at a distance with the Lord? If you do, you didn't get there on step one. You've bypassed a bunch of steps to get where you're at. The waters were churned up. The sailors figured out that Jonah was the problem, that the storm they were in. And Jonah said, just kill me. I do not want to go to Nineveh. Just toss me over and the sea will stop. Again, oh, that sounds so heroic to save the sailors. No, he would rather save his flesh than do what God wanted him to do. And that's what Peter did. You see, they didn't just get there in that moment. He bought a ticket. He got on the boat, and then he got down in the bottom of the boat. And he found himself in trouble. And Peter, in his self-preservation, he followed, but just not too close. Because the fire got a little too hot. And this leads to our final one, self-destruction. Like all sin, it is a slow descent further and further into destruction. Make no mistake, it typically does not happen overnight, as I've well stated that case already. But it's a culmination of small, sinful steps. They add up over time until we sin in such a major way against the Lord or someone we love. And in Peter's case, denying the Lord rolled completely off of his tongue so easily as his profession of faith of Jesus Christ three times. I do not know him. I do not know him. I do not know him. Again, to use the illustration of my buddy as we talked through these things, I told him I wanted to understand, and he was gracious to share so that I could help and to know. It's amazing. I'm like, did any of y'all work? No. How'd you get money? Well, we sell. Where do y'all live? Together. It's amazing that you can find people that are on the path to destruction if you want to find it. And that's what Peter did. He found himself in a place that he didn't think he would be because he was making choices that led him right with the people who were like-minded in what they were doing, the darkness of the night. It rolled right off his tongue. I want to take us to Psalm 1. It's funny how God used Bill to bring it up and me in this morning. I want you to get a picture of this. I want you to catch these words, and I don't want to not belabor the point, but I want you to get this today. Listen to what Psalm 1 says, verses 1 and 2. Blessed is the man or woman who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. I've given you Jonah. I'm going to give you the psalmist here, and I've given you Peter. The psalmist shows the difference between the blessed man and the wicked man. See, the blessed man does not walk, stand, or sit with wicked sinners and scoffers. He doesn't walk with them, stand with them, or sit with them. But the opposite is true with the wicked. You might be asking, what does this have to do with Peter? Or what does this have to do with you? Well, bear with me here. Peter walked into temptation, increasing his chances of sinning, did he not? By walking in the counsel of the wicked at the high priest's courtyard, he brought himself near to the sin that would engulf him. See, Peter overestimated his strength by first walking where he should not have been. One has to wonder, did you catch it in the text? If Peter didn't ignore God's warning sign, his providential protection when he was stopped at the door the first time. When he was told, don't come in, he should have walked away. But instead, he knew more, and he needed to get in there. And so he went one more step. He walked a little bit further than he could handle. Again, my buddy, I love him, and we're praying for him. And he said, I wish you guys would have just grabbed me and stopped me. I said, we did. We did a many a time. And we told you what you were doing. He said, I was in denial, wasn't I? I said, absolutely you were in denial. You weren't hearing anything we said to you. That's what sin does, man. And Peter wasn't hearing anything. He needed to get in there when he should have turned and walked away. But he miscalculated his strength. How different would it have been if he hadn't been misguidedly determined to walk through the door of temptation? And then what happens now is when you walk in sin, it becomes easier to stand in our sin, does it not? The next step in our step of destruction. Let's go back to John 18, 18. Again, I've made this point briefly, but I want you to hear it again, lest you think I'm making it up. Now the servants and the officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was, what? Standing with them. So he's walked with them, now he's standing in the company. The next step to our destruction is standing and warming himself. He is with them while his heart was growing colder. The comfort level of sin goes up and danger is all around, but we start to warm ourselves and to accept our sin, to rationalize it. And it abounds, does it not? I don't need certain things that other Christians need. I've got this. I don't need to lead in this manner as a man. I don't need to make decisions that's the best for my family. I don't have to have that hard conversation because that part of text isn't for me. That's how we rationalize it. And then the next thing you know, the final step for Jonah, it was in the belly of a well he never thought he would go to and thought he was dying. For Peter, it was the night of betrayal. And the psalmist tells us that the wicked will face the judgment for what comes. Luke 22, 55. Listen to this word. You know where I'm going. He says this. And when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat down among them. He walked, he stood, till finally he sat with them. Walking, standing, and sitting in sin, making ourselves at home in sin. It becomes a part of who we are and we normalize it. Next thing you know, as I've said it repeatedly in this sermon, we're doing things, saying things, thinking things, being in places we never thought we would be, doing things we never thought we would do. For Peter denying the Christ. So this is a sobering picture, is it not, today? It's one that each of us need to pause and honestly look at ourselves in light of Peter's. I'm asking you today, are you walking in one of these dark paths and you've been excusing it for so long? If you are unsaved, you are on the path to destruction. The darkness is all around. You need to flee to Christ today. Dear Christian, are you walking this path? Have you become cold and numb to the things of the Lord? Have you accepted the things that God is convicting you of? God will not bless us and do the things in our midst we pray for if we willingly and knowingly are walking in the sin. Whatever it may be, the question posed to Peter and is posed to you today, are you not one of Jesus' disciples? We don't ever want to be in shame and guilt and now the fear of man or the sinful steps we've taken say, I am not. I don't know him. So where are you in your following of Christ? The good news is we know that the story doesn't end there. The gospel of Jesus Christ is for sinners like Jonah, Peter, you, and me. So if you are on that path and you are on step 1 or 4, you are not beyond God's grace. But dear Christian, don't play in your sin. Don't fiddle with it any longer. Come to the Christ who not only forgives you and restores you and reconciles you, but will lead you in the way everlasting. May that be our mark today as we are challenged in this world to compromise on who we are as believers. I'm thankful for people like Peter. I'm not thankful for the sin that he committed, but I'm thankful because he gives hope for sinners like you and me. And Christ said, after you've done these things, Peter, come back, and Christ will use him greatly. Your sin is not the end of the story, but Christ Jesus' salvation and work in your life is. May you know that today and walk as the blessed men and women that God has called us to be. Let's pray.